Hello, everybody. This is Mark McNeese, and I'm very happy to be interviewing one of the other members of Mystery Writers of America, New York. And I believe you were at one time a board member also. Is that true, Anne?
That is true. Good afternoon or good morning or good day, Mark. Yes, I was a board member some time back. Unfortunately, I couldn't fulfill my full term. I ran into some health issues, but I was on the board and was happy to contribute to it.
Well, everybody, this is Anne Aptaker, and she is a native New Yorker. Her first book, Criminal Gold, was a Golden Crown Literary Society Goldie Award finalist. Your next book, Tarnished Gold, was the second book in the Cantor Gold series, was honored with a Lambda Literary Award and a Goldie Award at the same time, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Your short stories have appeared in two editions of the crime anthology Fedora, edited by award-winning crime author Michael Bracken. Your flash fiction, A Night in Town, appeared in the online zine Punk Soul Poet, and lots of other stuff going on there. And you also had a career before this that we're going to talk about.
Okay.
I just want to say hello to you and thank you for coming on. And can you fill us in a little bit more? Because I didn't want to take up too much time reading your fairly extensive biography.
Well, what can I say? Thank you again for having me on your podcast. What a wonderful opportunity to get my word out and my work out to our members and to anybody else who cares to know about me. Yes, I did have a career before writing. I was a curator in museums and galleries for many years. So that gave me an extensive art background, in addition, of course, to having degrees in art and art history. So when I put Cantor Gold onto the page and got her involved in the art world as a thief, as an art thief, I had the art background to give her the full measure of that world. The other thing that I did was I was a report writer for a private investigations firm out in California. When I was doing some art projects out there, I wound up also doing this report writing. And that gave me an up-close and personal view of crime and the criminal justice system, which also contributed to my decision to make Cantor an art thief instead of a legitimate art dealer, because I did see the corruption of the criminal justice system and decided Cantor could not be part of that and remain true to herself as an out lesbian in the 1950s and still maintain her integrity at a time when being an out member of the LGBTQ community was illegal. You could wind up in jail or even worse. So that's a little bit about me. Anything else you care to know, Mark?
Well, are you still an adjunct professor of art and art history?
No, I retired completely from all of that activity. I do occasionally do some art projects. I'll write an art essay from time to time or curate something from time to time. But essentially, I write full time now, which is wonderful. I love it.
Awesome. Do you, what informed your decision to set the Cantor Gold series in 1949 in that era?
That particular time in New York, all the books take place, the whole series takes place in New York. Like you say, the first book, Criminal Gold, opens in 1949, and the series goes through the 1950s. And my decision to put it at that time was because that period in New York, the post-war period in New York, was really a golden time. Broadway, for instance, was having just a real heyday of hit shows, fine plays, wonderful musicals. The city was prosperous on the whole. So on the surface, New York was literally gleaming and golden, no pun intended with Cantor's name, but it was a gleaming and golden city. But that was on the surface. Right underneath it was the post-war reality of people recognizing, because of the Second World War and the horrors of the Holocaust and the horrors of the war itself, that there was a dark side to humanity, and it existed in New York as well as elsewhere. And for the LGBTQ community, of course, it was both an exciting time. You had, you know, gay bars galore and drag shows galore that were glamorous and interesting, but it was all Sub Rosa, which gave it an additional glamour. But of course, it was very dangerous because there were the police raids and jailings and gay bashing and being thrown into the loony bin and so on. So the two together of a golden city and a dark city just had such appeal to me as a narrative device. And I'm a native New Yorker, as you mentioned. So the whole history of New York to me is so rich that putting all those elements together, my love of the city and its dark and light sides at that particular time for this particular character led me to place the series at that time in post-war New York City.
There were also, I believe, lesbian bars back then, which are
absolutely
very difficult to find now.
I know. Yeah. They were, the whole bar scene for the lesbian community has kind of slowed down. There's really just one or two. There's one out in Brooklyn, and then of course there's Henrietta Hudson here in the city, but most of it has become kind of a brunch scene or something, yeah, or people meeting in each other's apartments. But the whole bar scene is not nearly as lively as it was in the 50s, when that was really the only safe place, and even then not so safe, but the only real gathering place for lesbians in New York.
It's changing everywhere, even where I am, just to be tangential for a second, because I'm out here near New Hope, Pennsylvania. And 10 years ago, 15 years ago, there were three thriving gay bars, and they're all gone.
We're
just sort of being assimilated.
Yes, we are. You know, that's the interesting thing. That was another thing about putting Cantor Gold in that period. In some of the books, she does recognize that it was the earliest stirrings of what at the time was called the homosexual rights movement, which we, mm-hmm, of course, now call the LGBTQ rights movement and so on. But Cantor recognizes that there's a difference between rights and freedom. Rights can only be conferred by people who have the power to confer those rights, and they also have the power to take them away. Freedom is, she recognizes, or she defines it, Cantor defines freedom as an internal way of life. And she decides to live openly, freely, as a gentleman suited butch lesbian at a time when that was very, very dangerous to do. But she takes her freedom even at great risk to herself. So when you say we've become assimilated, to Cantor, that would be the price that you pay, and one she might not have been willing to pay, but that would be the price that we pay for our greater legal acceptance into society. You know, the idea of having same-sex marriage, and we can't be discriminated against in housing anymore, and so on. But in Cantor's time, where those things were not available, the Sub Rosa life of the gay community was much more colorful because it was far less assimilated. Now, understand, I wouldn't give up those rights personally in a million years.
Yeah.
But Cantor's world had more spice than perhaps ours does. Now, I'm speaking from the point of view of, you know, a middle-aged dyke, or actually a senior citizen dyke at this point. I noticed the younger members of the community are very interesting with their broadened descriptions of gender and so on. They have their, mm-hmm, own spice, but we also are more assimilated, and that has taken away, I think, some of our excitement. But our lives are much less dangerous now than they were in Cantor's day, and that's nothing to sneeze at.
At least
those are hard-won rights. You know, we really fought for them.
Yes, I was going to say at least for now.
At least for now, indeed.
At least for now. Mm. Now, do you consider the books noir?
Yes, I do, but in a looser sense of the word. Pure noir, I've heard described as when you get to the end of the story, you're still screwed. in Cantor's books, they are dark. They live in a dark, she lives in a dark world, in the underworld, in the criminal world. So there is the noir element as far as environment and setting and characters and emotions. But she does solve the murder. She does solve the crime. So there is a kind of criminal justice at the end. So that would make it less pure noir. But are they noir in terms of their attitude? Very definitely so, yeah.
And what, I just lost my train of thought there. What inspired Cantor? I mean, you sort of hit on that already, but how did she form in your imagination?
She'd been on my mind for a long time. She went through several iterations in my head, different names and this and that, but essentially this character. But originally, I had her as a private investigator, even in that time, until I started to work for a private investigator and was able to see the corruption of the criminal justice system and the oppressiveness towards certain populations and so on, and the fixed trials and what have you. And I knew at that point, while I was working for writing reports for the private investigations firm, that Cantor could not be on the legal side of the law and maintain her integrity. If I had not worked for the PI firm and seen the criminal justice system up close and how it functions and how it's broken, Cantor may have become a PI and probably would have been duller as a result. But by making her criminal, it gives her more excitement and more truth for that time. So I hope that answers your question.
It does. And where are you in the series?
I just recently handed in the manuscript for the 7th in the series. And this one is going to be called Gold for the Dead. And it will come out through Bywater Books. I think they told me either late 2025 or early 2026, something like that, because I just handed in the manuscript. So we have to go through the whole editing process and, you know, the production process and so on.
Are you writing other things as well?
I am indeed. Interestingly, my current novel that's out, which was out last year, which was not part of the Cantor Gold series, is called A Crime of Secrets, and it takes place in New York in 1899, and it's these two women, a gay couple, who are indeed private investigators. And their names are Finn Donner and Devorah Longstreet. Interestingly, Michael Bracken, who is a very respected editor of various anthologies and a writer, of course, himself, got in touch with me and said he's putting together an anthology based that all of the stories will be of women private investigators, and he would like a story of Finn and Devorah. So Finn and Devorah are now going to be out there. I just actually handed in the manuscript for that as well. And that anthology will be out next year sometime. And so now Finn and Devorah, this gay couple in 1899, will be out there in the great big world for all to enjoy. So that was a very nice invitation. And of course, I cleared it with my publishers, with Bywater Books, and they said, sure, go for it. I had a story just recently published in another anthology called, let's see if I can remember the full name, Covered and Chunked, and it's all stories. Oh, Scattered, Smothered, Covered and Chunked, and it's stories inspired by roadside diners, particularly Waffle House. And I have a story in there called Destiny Road. So I continually write short stories in addition to my novels.
Very good. And how long have you been a member of the Mystery Writers of America, New York?
I think I joined when my either I joined when my first short story came out in 2008 or 9, something like that, or maybe when my first book came out in 2014. So 10, 12, 14 years, something like that.
And are there any, like, what are some of the benefits that you've enjoyed? I'm assuming meeting other writers is one of them, other mystery writers.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, goodness, yes. Oh, gosh, yeah. What a great community. Oh, my gosh. That's probably my top benefit, is finding a literary home, so to speak. People who have respect for the mystery genre, who treat it as literature and not as, you know, an also-ran in the world of English-speaking letters. So that to me is the main benefit. The other benefits are the various discussions on the craft of writing and what's going on in the literary world, opportunities for submissions, so the professional end, the business end of writing, so to speak. But I would have to say, again, topmost is having a community of people that have respect for the work that we do. And I have to say, have respect for my work, since so much of my writing involves stories of gay people and what our lives are like, and what they have been like and what we've been through. And putting that into the literary mystery genre and having my colleagues at MWA New York show respect for that. That's really been quite, quite wonderful.
Well, I have to agree with you on that, because I'm a bit of a loner to some extent, but I live out in the woods in New Jersey. I lived in the city for 25 years. Mm. And then my husband and I moved out here, and it's really, invigorating to have the community you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And then to have been asked to be on the board. And of course, that's a lot of activity that's involved with that. I also I'm going to just mention the Leon Burstein Awards, because it was a scholarship until this year. Mm. And now it's a monetary award. And I happen to think it's like quite substantial. It's $4,000.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness.
For the winner. Mm-hmm. And, $1,000 for the runner up. And it is, people should check out the website, mwanewyork.org. You do need to be a member.
Yes.
And it's primarily for associate members, because once you're an active member, as we are, you're published, and it's not really open to published authors. It's
exactly.
You can write a short story. It depends. There's the criteria is there. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying that I think that's a really substantial prize.
Oh, it is. It's quite wonderful. And I would encourage any up-and-coming authors, if you have a manuscript that you're working on, whether it's a novel or a short story or a novelette, whatever, flash fiction, actually to definitely look into that, because I wish that was happening, you know, when I was an up-and-coming writer. I really could have used that kind of financial support, as so many of us could have at the time of our beginnings. And I think MWA New York to do this is just extraordinary. What a wonderful statement, as far as supporting our up and coming authors.
Yes, and we welcome more. So if you're listening to this and you're not a member of MWA or MWA New York, our chapter, regional chapter, please consider it, because
absolutely
we want, you know, future writers in there as well as current writers. We want to grow and expand and make ourselves available with what we have to offer to all different kinds of people, writers. So please check it out and think about it. And Anne, it was so nice to talk to you today and to finally meet you. You and I have been Facebook friends for a while, because
for quite a while. Yeah.
Yeah. We're authors. And of course I know a lot of LGBT mystery authors on mm-hmm. Facebook, and that's basically how I know you. Mm-hmm. And then to have, you know, finally met you as both members of the Mystery Writers of America was really quite pleasant. And
I know. I enjoyed meeting you as well, for the same reasons, you know, to put a person, a flesh and blood person, in real life to a name that we see on Facebook, lively as our discussions are, it just was marvelous. It was quite wonderful. What a great holiday gift.
Now, how can people find your books and you?
Well, finding my books in all the usual ways, since I'm traditionally published, so you can find me on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Smashwords and all the usual places online. Mm-hmm. Libraries have my books. And if they don't happen to have any, you know, any of the books, then you can just ask them to order it, and they do. They're quite wonderful. The libraries are wonderful about making my books available. Same with bookstores. A number of bookstores do carry them, but if they don't happen to have them, just ask them to order them, and they absolutely will. If you're in New York, one of the places where you can buy my books and support LGBTQ bookstores, of course, is the Bureau of General Services division in the center, in the LGBTQ center. They're the bookstore on the second floor. So other than that, you know, just wherever you buy books, you can find me. There I am.
Are they audiobooks? I'm just curious.
No, not yet. I hope sometime in the future that they will be. But right now, they're just for reading, both on, you know, e-books and print books.
Well, Anne, it was so nice to talk to you again. Now that I've met you in person and interview you for the site, and just to let people know about you and share your experience, strength, and hope for the future. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. And thanks again. And Happy New Year.
You too. Bye.
Bye.